go ahead and call the order regularly.
Start that over again with the microphone. I'll go ahead and call the order of the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting. Today, August 19th, 2014, if the audience will join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next on the agenda is a public comment section number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Not seeing anybody moving towards the mic. Other reports. Presentation of the 2014 Urban Renewal Application cities of Huxley, Kelly, Maxwell, and Story City. Leanne Harder. Morning, Leanne.
Morning.
Hi, Leanne.
We are going to go in that order. And Travis, if you want to come on up.
Hey, Travis.
How you doing?
Good morning. Travis Bakken, Parks and Recreation Director for the City of Huxley. Our proposal was a Heart of Iowa Nature Trail improvement, and that would run from U.S. Highway 69 to Trail Ridge Park, located in Huxley. The pink section highlighted trail is that which we are looking to pave. So this project will pave 1 mile of the Heart of Iowa Trail from Highway 69 to Trail Ridge Park, located west side of 560th Avenue. Currently, this section of the trail has a limestone surface. Proposed paving would be concrete to a width of 10 feet and a depth of 6 inches. The trail in Huxley is divided by Highway 69. The west section from North 5th Avenue to Highway 69 is currently paved, and that's 0.7 miles. The east section of Highway 69, or the east section from Highway 69 to Trail Ridge Park, is currently limestone. We did add a stoplight at 1st Street and 69, and so we did pave a portion of that. So that green section on the right side of Highway 69, it currently just was paved up into the corner there. So we have begun that. And that's a finished project, so we're just looking to continue. We've been working on trying to get this paved for 3 years now. So there's quite a few benefits to the project. The main one being we're hoping this will kickstart the paving of the trail, and hopefully, you know, towns along the Heart of Iowa will be able to capitalize on this trail like the towns did on the High Trestle Trail. So that's the ultimate goal. There's a lot of other benefits there. I won't read through all of them there, but the city of Huxley, we definitely realize the economic benefits of trail systems in central Iowa. And the city recommended improving the trail in our updated 2013 comprehensive plan. This is the budget for the project. You can see the total cost of the project is roughly $282,000. The city of Huxley has been awarded a REAP grant for $75,000. Story County Conservation, who we are working as a partner with on this project, received a SERPTA grant for $180,000. We've had two local businesses in Huxley each pledge $5,000 to the project, so the remaining balance to get this project started would be the $16,233, and that's what we submitted for the Urban Renewal Area Project request. I know you guys require a match there, and we feel like the City of Huxley with the REAP grant would cover the match. So that's all I have. Thank you for your time. Do you have any questions?
Just I saw an interesting study, I think yesterday or the day before. Mike, you might be able to help me on this. Carol Williams sent out something where Woodward had just done a look at what kind of impact the High Trestle Trail had had to them, and it's substantial.
Mike, why don't you come up on the microphone so we can capture your comments, please?
I think in Woodward they looked at income to the community pre High Trestle Trail and then a few years post High Trestle Trail, and it was substantial. I don't have the numbers here in front of me, but I want to say it was several
over a million, yeah.
Increase in revenue to the community.
I'm good.
But thank you.
Travis, thanks.
Thanks.
Like Bob Barker. Come on down.
Good morning.
Morning. Morning.
Thank the Board of Supervisors for the opportunity to present Maxwell's request for grant funding. Maxwell is requesting street improvement funds to match park improvements for the Story County Freedom Rock, which is sponsored locally by the American Legion and the VFW. The purpose of a Freedom Rock, the goal of Freedom Rock, is to honor Story County veterans and promote tourism in Story County, particularly the town of Maxwell in this case. Veterans are honored through a patriotic theme mural that's painted on the rock. This started 15 years ago by Ray Sorensen on a rock near Menlo, Iowa. The idea is to have rocks in all 99 counties so that there can be a tour where people go rock to rock and see the various murals. This idea grew from people visiting the original rock. Currently, there are 19 counties that have painted rocks. The blue counties are counties that have committed locations for rocks and have funded the improvements so that the rock can be painted. And the 29 counties in gray have not yet committed to having a rock, although this will change because Ragbri went across northern portion of Iowa, and part of Ragbri this year we had a person from Maxwell who helped promote the Freedom Rock Tour, and there were a lot of people interested in that. The project right now has three phases. The current year project will complete the site. We have the rock completed. We are working on the platform. We will set engraved bricks for the first 400 bricks, and we will have flags flying above the platform. Next year, we hope to have the rock painted. We are on the schedule to have it painted next year. Put in curb and gutter so that there will be improved parking near that area, and put in a sidewalk. And in 2016, we hope to put up a picnic shelter. And we are on schedule to have a military symbol of some sort, be it a tank or howitzer. We could park the Story County vehicle down there if you'd like it.
Read my mind.
Leo said that.
I just like that you and I looked at each other when he said it.
I saw the interplay over there. Overall, in the 3 years, we expect to spend $104,000. This is a little bit more than what I had in the grant, and that's because we were just looking at what we had done in 2014 and what we would like to get done in 2015. Yes, sir.
The question I had was the $58,000 for the painted rock curb and gutter, and I think we've got $68,000 here in front of us. Do they not line up?
Just right. Okay. And part of that is the reason for that is the $68,000 includes some of the 34, most of the 34, but we've increased some of the scope of the project in the intervening 3 months because of some donations. Okay. So the overall project's a little bit bigger, and the 2016 was not included in the request. Where we're putting up the picnic shelter, it was originally going to be just a kiosk. Now we have given some columns that were salvaged from the demolition of the Story County Courthouse. If you go downstairs and see the picture in your lobby, there's these nice cast iron columns on a little portico in front of the building that was salvaged years ago by Mr. Pritchard and his sons have been saving them all these years, and they want to use them in a picnic shelter down there, which themes well with the museums and everything else that we have down there. So just like any project, enthusiasm gets behind it and it creeps. So
total project cost that we ought to be considering, instead of being $68,000, we ought to be considering $104,000.
Yes, sir.
And $38,000 would be the total request. You're not going. There's not going to be an additional request for that picnic shelter as part of this program.
We don't anticipate it.
Not this time, at least. Hopefully. You notice he answered that not anticipated.
I did. Yeah. Absolutely.
Gotta leave yourself an out.
Moving along, this is what the rock looks like when we installed it. It was 26 tons, located on a farm northeast of town. It was moved into town and set all with volunteer labor, which we did use heavy equipment. We didn't just have everybody pick it up. Today, if you go down and look, you'll see that the rock is surrounded by the beginnings of the platform. Randy Pritchard has been laying the retaining wall using best practices to ensure a permanent improvement. The slide shows the approximate ground level where the engraved bricks will be placed. The platform wall will extend about 2 feet higher than the ground level so that there is a parapet, and in front of the parapet will be special stones for individuals killed in action so that people will not be walking on the names of people killed in action. The rock on top of these bricks is the stones that will be used for individuals killed in action. It'll contain some information about the a little bit more information about the individual. The other bricks that you see there are the engraved bricks, typically name, branch of service, and service dates. Flags for each of the branch of service will fly above the brick platform, and each year as more bricks are engraved, existing blank bricks will be replaced until hopefully every service person in Story County has a chance to be represented at the monument. Maxwell is requesting $38,000 in urban renewal funding to install curb and gutter along Trotter Boulevard. Trotter Boulevard has curb and gutter on the east, but not on the west side. The curb and gutter will improve the parking for visitors at the Freedom Rock and other veteran memorial at the park. Currently, the street is seal-coated without a curb. Additional traffic from visitors will make it difficult to maintain that surface. Putting curb and gutter and an asphalt mat will make it a more easily maintained area. Failure to receive the funds, of course, will stretch the project into additional years. The military, this is a piece of military equipment. Next year's phase, we will build the picnic shelter. And unfortunately, the cast iron columns that we got, the capitals on the top were damaged, so they're not going to be quite as fancy as they were, but they will be the columns that had been salvaged from the demolition of the Story County Courthouse. Both the Maxwell Legion and the VFW are on lists to receive a piece of excess military display equipment. And when it's received, we've been on the list for about 3 years. When it's received, it'll be added to the south end of the platform, with the shelter being in the middle of the platform and the named bricks surrounding it. What makes a successful project is sponsors. Here are a few of the sponsors that have provided substantial funds so far. It also is successful through contributions. People have paid to have engraved bricks, paid a little bit more than what it costs so that we can get them installed. We have 15 Killed in Action blocks that have already been donated. We're in contact with the other Legion and VFW posts to get all of Story County individuals who have been killed in action listed down there. Granite benches, flagpoles, the historic columns, lots of volunteer labor and materials. And in particular, I want to point out or want to mention that this would not, the Story County Freedom Rock would not have been possible in Maxwell without the leadership of Bob and Randy Pritchard and the support of GrassFireNet, a internet company down in Maxwell. If you have any questions at this time, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Here.
Hi, my name is Kenny Kling. I'm the mayor at Kelly. See, my project's not near as exciting as the last one, but it's a water main project that's on the south end of Kelly that we've been working on. I was hoping to have the engineer's drawings completed so you guys can see a better drawing than what you can see here today, because I just kind of drew this one out last night, so sorry for the crudeness of it, but gives us a pretty good idea of what we're going to do. It's the houses there along Hubble Street are running on a 2-inch water line right now, which, as one says, when the neighbor's taking a shower and the other one flushes the toilet, they know about it. So it's, and we have the two lots that are on the opposite side of the street. The first house is being built as we speak right now, and the open area, just I call it to the south, where Kelly Iowa is listed on the map, is where a area farmer owns that ground. He's talked of building a cul-de-sac and building a little small development of houses back in there. So if we built the line the way we do it, put the new fire hydrant at that south end, we'd be ready for a cul-de-sac when he was ready for developing that area. So I hope you have a copy of the original application. We had asked for Well, the construction cost, everything we thought was to be $106,650. That was our engineer's original guess to get everything done. We were trying to get this in time for the application. He thought we'd go down the middle of the street. That was the worst case scenario. Well, we're going to be able to go on the east side, so we're hoping to get the cost down somewhere between $60,000 and $70,000. We're hoping we're going to be the area where the project's going to end up by the time we're all engineered and finished. So, like I said, not near as exciting, but that's really all I have on it. So,
you know, I think you can make it a little bit exciting if you look at it from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, I could just see that statement about everybody knowing what the other one's doing when they flush the toilets could be marketed, and people would just be flocking to this community just to be part of that.
Mayor, so the expectation is that it will be less than $106,650 that
yes.
you guys have on the application. Kelly still has the $50,000 to
right.
eat up the first $50,000 of the project, and you're coming to the county asking for whatever it is over the $50,000. Is
correct.
That right?
That's correct.
And when will we have harder numbers on what the expected costs are?
I tried getting a hold of our engineer. He's on vacation this week, but he said we will have our project ready to go out to bid by the September meeting. And I'm hoping by then, you know, I'm hoping by October. Anyway, we should be able to, October, maybe early November. I'm not sure how long the bid process is going to take, but I was hoping to have it in the ground this fall yet, but if not, it's going to be spring project. So, you know, one way or the other, we're going to get this project done.
Well, even if we don't have final numbers, anything that we start to narrow down what that final number
right,
would be
right.
would be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, very much so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, thank you.
Very nice.
Senator Olive, I didn't see you there. You were hiding behind Mike Cox. How are you?
I was trying hard.
It's not often that you can go somewhere and be inconspicuous, is it?
That's interesting. You can see me, but you couldn't see
me. I got to get my eyes checked.
Start.
Well, I'm Mark Jackson. I'm the city administrator in Story City, and this is Rich Olive, who is, I don't know what your official title now is with the Story City Economic Development Group, but what we're looking to do, and I think you have a copy of the map in there, what we're looking is we're proposing to construct, aptly named, Rich Olive Street in the Interstate 35 Business Park. And what we're looking to do there is it's about 1,000 feet of new street that's out there. It will cost, now the original cost estimate you have there is approximately $901,000. Some of the latest estimates we have are $835,000. So, you know, yeah, I've saved you a little bit of money, but it's not a whole lot of money. It's still an expensive project. It will open up another 32.6 acres of land for development in our industrial park. And one of the things is we're building a speculative building out there, and with that, I'll turn that portion over to Rich.
It's a little embarrassing to be talking about a street construction with your name on it, but the good news is it doesn't say Memorial Road. I was at the council meeting last night, and I asked them to change the name to Raceway, Rich Olive Raceway. I thought that was a little bit better name for it, but they chose not to. But in that I-35 business park that we have, as you guys know, we have three businesses currently out there, the EB Trailers, the Indo-Shell Precision Machine, and Next Era Generation Repair and Service, with about $25 million of investment from those companies, as well as the city with providing 200 jobs roughly. Our idea is to, again, open up another 30 acres with a 40,000-square-foot building, which is a collaboration between the city and Story Construction Company with our economic development group in Story City to hopefully create additional jobs out there, not only in this 40,000-square-foot building, but again, opening up these acres, we hope to attract other companies as well, and in fact have a couple of leads. But as you guys know, doing economic development right now is really actually pretty good fun. So with that, again, we're looking for some assistance just to get this street in.
The other thing we would note is, and I don't know if Rich mentioned this, the cost of the spec building is $1.2 million. That the city, in partnership with Story Construction, and even some investment from our municipal electric is doing. And the other thing to note is that the city, over the course of the last 15, 20 years, has invested $5.5 million out there. And so when the note is we've invested $5.5 million and we've had over $25 million of development out there. That's a pretty good return on your investment. And what we've looked at is that we've had payback on TIF, because it is TIFed out there, in about 7 years. So we've had excellent return on the investment out there. The other thing we would point out with regards to tax increment financing as it relates to Story City is that in many communities that TIF valuation has continued to increase, whereas in Story City, the amount of valuation we use has decreased substantially. It's gone up a little bit this upcoming year because of the spec building project that we're doing, but we're one of the few communities that's actually seen a decline in TIF valuation that it's used. And then on top of that, we have the third lowest tax levy rate of cities in Story County. So I think we've been very judicious in this, and that the use of TIF is twofold: slum and blight and economic development. And this fits exactly in what TIF is to be used for, as an economic development project such as this.
Yeah, Mark, I appreciate you pointing that out. We've been really impressed with the way Story City has utilized TIF. I think it's completely appropriate. In fact, we tried to model some of what we've done here based on how you guys have done things. My question is simply, you do a great job of it. This is clearly right in the heart of a project that you guys have TIFed. Why aren't you pulling these dollars out of that, knowing that you're getting, maybe the payback goes up a little bit from 7 years to beyond, but why should dollars come from other areas of TIF when it looks to me like you're doing a great job, especially with this project here?
Right, that's a great question, and it reminds me of when we were going for CAT dollars for the recreation project we were doing, and Michael Gartner was having the same thing. Your financials look great.
Absolutely.
You're solid that. And I said, so you're saying is we should be punished for doing an excellent, judicious job financially.
Yeah,
my point is,
catch-22, sure.
And so actually, this the other point I would make is that we are going to apply for some RISE money in the amount of $323,615. We could use more TIF, but what that does is that, as you know, is that if you use more of TIF in your valuation, it affects your general fund, not only the city's general fund, but the county's as well.
Absolutely.
So that's the part that it does as well. The other part is most of those jobs are out there are people that live within Story County.
Absolutely.
So it's
true.
A benefit.
But,
this is
as far as the way it hits Story County.
Sure.
You TIFing it.
Yes.
To pay for it is not going to hit Story County any differently than us pulling TIF dollars out of the wind farms in terms of our general fund. It's not going to hit us any differently. It's still dollars coming out of ultimately the general fund. And so what I've got to resolve in my mind, Mark, and I know you appreciate this, is should these things be handled as locally as possible, as locally as they can where possible? And so I'll turn back to the project that was just presented from Kelly. And I look at that. Here's a water main project. It's a project that the town itself, whether you're being punished for doing such a great job or not, I don't know. But it's a town that they've got $50,000 to do a project that's going to be $75,000 to $90,000 is what I'm hearing. And they've got no way to go identify those additional resources.
Rick, they do. You raise water rates or sewer rates in order to pay for projects like that. There are, in each of these projects that you have, there are other ways of paying for those projects. And I could agree, yes, if we don't receive any funding from Story County, are we going to proceed with this project? Of course we are. We see this as a benefit for the county. And what we also see is this is exactly what TIF is to be used for, is for economic development. It creates additional property values that you will benefit from at the county, and it creates jobs as well. And those people living, that creates jobs for, will live in Maxwell, in Kelly, in Roland. So all these communities benefit from what we're doing as well.
Agree with you completely. I agree that this is a TIF project. I'm just not sure it's a county TIF project. I think it's a, it might be, and I'm not there yet. I'm trying to get my mind around it. It might be just a Story City TIF project. I'm in agreement that, you know, paving this road, you need to find a better name for it, but paving this road.
I would agree with that, Rick.
He didn't know anything about it. It wasn't.
So I'm just trying to reconcile exactly where that happens. So I appreciate your help.
Well, what adds to it is it gives us an entirely different little bit of perspective in terms of how, you know, you are approaching it in terms of what financial resources are already as a part of the ongoing development of this area versus some of the others. But as you say, when you are looking at the RISE grants and other types of things, obviously the ability to identify funding sources, you know, bodes well when you're applying for these types of things. The issue again, and I don't know exactly, you've got the estimate cost down, but what is the projected expectations from Story County if at all we would see this as something that we would be wanting to consider?
You mean in terms of the amount that we requested based on the criteria would probably bust the bank for you guys on this one?
Right.
You mean what did I come here saying, you know what I could do? Mm-hmm. You know, I thought if you could contribute 10% toward the cost of this project, that would be extremely helpful.
Sure.
Okay.
And because I see the needs and other, you know, and it shouldn't, and I know you have limited dollars. And, you know, there's a lot of great projects that are out there, and I see that you want to leverage those dollars as much as possible. But if you can contribute 10% of what we estimated the cost of this project would be, I think that'd be a great investment by the county.
So instead of $676,000,
I just went by the criteria you guys set. Absolutely. Hey, I'm going
to. That's why we're asking that question.
He is to try to get to the bottom, and I think it's a
you
great
know, and actually,
great
if we were the only ones that had applied, this would have been easier. So when you see when these projects come in, and I read through the list, and I know the dilemma that you run under, I come in here going, okay, what is it that we would be beneficial to us that they can show they've been involved in economic development, and I came up with 10%.
So I'm amount requested in my notes, I'm writing $83,500.
Yeah, but don't go less than that, Rick.
It's a starting point. That's outstanding, Mark. Thank you.
We appreciate the presentation.
And I appreciate the questions as well. I mean,
absolutely. Right. Like I say, I'm sincere when I say you guys are doing a great job with this stuff.
But the
You're
other
a
point,
model
but
for
the
small
other,
communities.
But the other point is, remember this, is that whether the cost of the road is the same whether it's built in Story City or Ames, the cost is the same, but we're a town of 3,500, and that's a town of 60,000.
Sure.
It's more of a financial burden for us to take something like this on than it would be in the city of Ames.
Oh, yeah. I struggled with the idea of building a road in Colo last year. I would struggle with building a road really anywhere. Curb and gutter, I'm trying to get my mind around.
But what we're committed to as well is building a spec building. So the city's now on the hook for another $1.2 million. So now I got a $2 million project. But in the end, when that building's filled, you benefit from it because the new tax property tax dollars that are generated from that. So that's the selling point I can make, is you will benefit from it on an economic standpoint on the revenue side.
Well, we benefit from everything positive that you guys do.
Right.
I mean, we recognize that. Can you update us just while you're here on Loves? Is there anything going on with Loves up there by you that you can talk about?
Well, I don't know which one of us should.
Yeah.
We'll both do it. Well, you know, we... I'll start out and say that last night the City Council, the Planning and Zoning Commission, and members of the EDC had a work session with Loves that I would say was very productive last night. And?
There is still maybe one small hurdle that we need to get through.
Not me. I mean, when he said small hurdle, he wasn't referring to me, okay? And it wasn't, and it's not the city, but
as far as he knows, I wasn't referring to him. But, once we get through that, we would hope that we would actually transfer the property to them yet this fall, with construction in the spring. Do you remember the estimated cost? of the buildings?
Well, their total investment is $7 million. The buildings themselves, it's about $2 million in value, in new value that they're kind of estimating at this time.
Well, just for my sake, is this similar to what I see when I go into Minnesota at the Loves, filling station, convenience store, all of those, you know, amenities?
Yeah, there. Kind of a franchise. The food thing is a Hardee's,
right?
As well.
Okay, gotcha. I'm familiar then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There would be some changes to that, just at the request of different folks in Story City on the design of the building and landscaping, those types of things. But as far as the services offered, it'd be very, very similar.
One of the other buildings is it's a tire service center, is that correct? And they made the point last night, this is the first one they've ever done that will have landscaping around a tire service center.
Okay.
Thank you for the update.
Great, thank you. Thank you for the update. Good.
Thanks.
Good.
You're welcome.
Yeah, great.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. Anything to add, Leanne?
Pardon me. Next week will be the final presentations. You'll hear from Slater, Ziering, Nevada, and Colonesco, and then Lisa and Stacy, I think. I don't know if jointly they're going to do it, but come and talk about TIF, what funding is available, and just as you go forth for decision making.
Outstanding. Good job. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. And really a special thank you to each of the communities for the work that you put forth. You know, when we started a year ago down this path, it was kind of the initial start, and we were kind of saying, well, now, where's this going to go? What the future is going to hold? And I think as time has gone by and you've looked at your community needs and looking at the proper fit for some of the things that we're trying to do as complete outreach to the betterment of Story County citizenry and economic growth, it's interesting to see how exciting some of these things are now, at least being in the early preliminary stages, which I think speaks well for our county and speaks well for all of the entities coming together towards looking at these things. So that's a really encouraging sign, I believe.
Yep. Wayne, well said. I think four really diverse but exciting projects. I'm excited to give them full consideration and see where we can get. And you guys all did a great job with the presentations. Thank you.
And much so.
Doesn't get any easier. I know that. Next is consideration of minutes from 8-12-14. Move approval.
Second.
Motion a second. Any additional corrections? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those have been approved. Personnel actions. Move approval.
Second.
Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Consent agenda. We need to add utility permits 1507 and 1508.
Okay. Move approval with the noted changes.
Second.
Anything additional? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That's been approved. That takes us down to additional items. Open bids for trail resurfacing to portions of the Heart of Iowa Natural Trail and the Prairie Rail Trail. Mike Cox.
Okay.
Let's just pave the whole thing. Both of them.
Perfect. Perfect.
Okay.
Can I quote you?
Sure.
All right, you guys are familiar with this project. This is a partially FEMA-funded project from the flooding of last year. This project will provide trail resurfacing over a significant portion of the Heart of Iowa Trail and, to a lesser extent, some of the Prairie Rail Trail. We did receive one bid. The bid is from Construct Incorporated.
The bid bond is complete. And the bid amount is $161,229.20. Again, $161,229.20. Excuse me? Oh. I'm sorry. The bid amount again is $161,229.20.
Mike, did you and the Conservation Board, as you were moving forward and talking about this project, have in your mind what you thought an estimate cost would be? And if so, how close is this bid price to that estimate?
The bid exceeds the FEMA estimated amount. This is a large project with FEMA. My understanding with them is that exceedances on that estimated amount are okay, and they will be paid by FEMA. Local funding would still be required for a percentage, and that is 15%. So I will, before we make any recommendations, I will take this back, talk to FEMA about the bids, and confirm that they will still pay the 85% of the bid cost. Their original FEMA approved amount was $97,000.
Okay, so right now all we're actually doing is just acknowledging the receipt of the one bid and the amount that is proposed, and then you will do follow-up work, and come back to us at a later time depending upon what information you receive.
Correct.
Is that correct?
I will ask the Conservation Board for a recommendation to this board. The Conservation Board meeting is tomorrow evening. And then my intention would be to bring this back in front of this board next Tuesday.
Okay. All right. Great.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Consideration of sending FY15 budget amendment to publication. Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Markley.
Told you it was coming. Kept telling you I was going to be coming to you for a budget amendment.
Yep.
So what you have in front of you is documentation for what I would like to push or move forward to send to publication for a public hearing to be held 9/9 of 2014 to amend the Story County 15 budget. I can run through it now if you'd like me to, so you're familiar with what's going on. Would that be good? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I think for those that are listening in, it would be helpful.
So I'm looking to amend the attorney's office for staffing, because whoever did the payroll numbers missed an employee, an assistant employee. So I'm amending asking to amend that. We spent the carryover for economic development for the local option sales tax dollars, so I need to amend that in for FY14. The watershed improvement grant for Hickory Grove is going to be affecting a couple of different places. One of them, conservation. The majority of the dollars are running through those. That got approved like April, maybe, I want to say. March, April, something like that. It was after the budget had been set, let's just say. So I want to do that there. Environmental health is part of that, so I'm amending their budget. And countywide, the Board of Supervisors is also involved in that, so I'm amending that for that grant. We're looking to spend some of the assigned funds at the end of the fiscal year. When I was here in July and told you what we assigned, $3,000 for human services and $85,000 for facilities management. Those were a couple projects that he's carrying forward. And then for IT, they're spent about $132,900 on carry forward funds. Planning and development, I'm lowering their budget by the salary of the outreach coordinator, which was moved to the general fund. I don't really have to amend for this, but I just thought it'd be cleaner if I go ahead and do
right,
that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then there's some miscellaneous things in countywide services. We just did a metal detector at the sheriff's office that came out of countywide. That was about $4,500, maybe $4,000. The GRIP mentoring grant got approved again this year, which was after the budget, so I want to put that in there. Putting the outreach coordinator in countywide services, obviously. The motor vehicle purchase, the whole health and emergency management transfers of funds. Mm-hmm. Then we have some dollars for TIF communities, small community spending that we're carrying forward that I want to put in there, and then 37.8 in capital improvements I want to move forward. So, also the urban renewal economic development TIFs, so some more carryover funds that I want to put back in the budget, and the Dakin's Lake development. Obviously, that's not done, so it's sitting in the fund balance. We're going to put it in there so they can spend it this year. So overall, the expenditures are a little over $2.2 million, which is a 5.5% increase over our original budget. And there's very few revenues going with this. There are $400,000 worth of conservation or watershed improvement. There's some IDNR and some local government payments that are going to be helping with the water improvement grant. And then, obviously, the GRIP mentoring grant is a pass-through and such. So we only have $423,000 worth of revenues. I'm only amending the revenue dollars in that I'm aware of right now. We do have some better numbers on our business property tax credit and in our rollback numbers. I guess I'm taking the same approach I did at budget time. Let's see how those fall out as opposed to budgeting for them at this point in time. So overall, we're only increasing the revenues by 1% at this point in time.
But our ending fund balance is up substantially over what we budgeted to be. I mean, let's just be clear.
Yes.
So we budgeted to end FY14 with $13 million total in our ending fund balances. And instead of the $13 million, we ended up with $14.3 million.
14.
So, I mean, so a lot of this, most of this, is carryover from dollars that we had budgeted to spend last year that didn't get spent by the end of the fiscal year, and now we've got to have them this year as the projects actually get done.
We have about, we're using about $600,000 of the ending fund balance in the general fund that we had more than we anticipated anyway, but
sure.
We are using some.
Well,
of
we said our beginning ending fund balance for this year was going to be 11.5, and really it was 14.6. So we're coming out ahead, no matter how you slice it, whether you slice it now or at the expected end of FY15, we're still ahead.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So basically, I'm here today to just give you an overview, to answer any questions you might have, and to go ahead and get your permission to send it on to for publication so that we can have a public hearing on 9-9. And you'll have to see my ugly mug again. Okay?
So I would so move that we give the authorization to go ahead and send the FY15 budget amendment for publication.
Yeah, I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. There you go.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Keep up good work.
Agency reports. Juvenile Court. Shirley Faircloth.
Hey, hey.
Always love it when Shirley's here.
I'm not going to tell that tale.
You see, we got a new DCAT member?
No.
Yep.
I haven't seen that. Mm-hmm. I got to go on my email yesterday.
Thanks.
Also.
Sincerely, I do always enjoy coming and presenting to the Board of Supervisors, especially I work in several different counties, and this board is very dedicated to the community and the members of Story County, and we're really lucky to have you looking out for the folks that reside here. I don't have a whole lot in this report since we've started a new fiscal year. Do have a little review from fiscal year 14. We were within budget for every line item except for the Iowa Juvenile Home. We knew that was a possibility. The Juvenile Home did close back in January. We have set aside $30,000. Certainly does not look like that's going to open back up. When you look at fiscal year 15 expenses, I've broken that down for line item. The two that will jump out at you as far as increased or higher expenses, given that we're only at the end of July with these figures, is for protective living and sheltered workshops. That is for Rosedale Shelter, placement of state-mandated county costs for shelter placements outside of Rosedale and also the detention facility. That would include any medical expenses while kids are at the detention facility, because Title 19 does not cover any medical expenses while they're residing at detention. So those are numbers that we will continue to review. Youth and Shelter Services has done a wonderful job working with us and Department of Human Services. I'm going to begin meeting on a monthly basis with Department of Human Services to review the clients that are not being served at Rosedale, to really look at was that they were too young for the population? Was there some conflict with another client that they may have been a victim, or they run risk? Was there not a bed available? So that we can really determine why those gaps in services. Certainly we have done that. If we've got two co-defendants and we need to place them in different facilities, we'll look at that. But from June and July, Department of Human Services had 11 placements outside of Rosedale, totaling that $9,190.05. So that's something that I'm hoping to be able to give you much more specific, detailed information on why we're looking at those outside placements. The medical expenses will continue to review. The problem with the medical expenses, or the issue when a client goes in the middle of the night, if they don't have medication, we do need to obviously supply that medication, and really trying to determine how we can streamline some of that. If it's a planned placement, we can do the best we can to get medication to go with the client, but we're not always able to do that. State budget has not really changed much since I reported to you back in May. We are at full staffing. Ames High School continues with a full-time juvenile court school liaison, and the middle school has a part-time school liaison. They do staff with our office on a weekly basis. It has really helped not only with service to our clients, but individuals that may be at risk, and so we can get those services in and hopefully divert them from our system by providing those services up front. I have laid out for you just current placement cases in Story County, and these figures are as of yesterday. We have one at the State Training School, two at Central Iowa Detention, one in shelter, 11 in residential treatment, and then three in enhanced supervision, and that would be using our electronic monitor system. So they're here in the community, but in addition to they may or may not have an ankle bracelet, but there would be face-to-face contact with one of our trackers. We continue to use programs which are funded in part by Story County, including functional family therapy, community service work sites, restitution programs, tracking and monitoring, our weekend offender program, which the boys are at Radnor's in Fort Dodge and the girls are at Quakerdale in New Providence. And we have a variety of diversion programs, including shoplifting, alcohol and drug education, anger management classes, and fire safety. So we have a lot of partners within the community in order to provide these services. The last page is just an overview of referrals that we have received in juvenile court from the beginning of the calendar year, not the fiscal year. The number one referral type of charge is assaults. Our second highest referral would be thefts. Our third category, I've kind of included them, would be substance abuse charges. So that includes OWI, possession of alcohol under legal age, and any drug-related charges. And then our fourth would be vandalism. We have had an increase in the number of younger referrals in that 11 to 15-year age gap, and that's at the bottom of that chart there.
How much of an increase?
I need to go back when I was looking at that this morning and double-check where that's been. Those clients tend to have, we're seeing them come in with more, sometimes more mental health issues, and if we can, you know, start getting those services in. So obviously working with, through DCAT, we're looking at getting some mental health services into the school, which we had not had before. That may help address that, but I will get those specific numbers for you.
Are we, surely anecdotally, are we seeing more and more severe cases that seem to be tied to some of the necessary mental health interventions? I know when George was here several weeks ago, you're starting to, at least on an anecdotal level, be able to tie those together. I was wondering if you're seeing the same kind of things through juvenile court service.
Yes, and it's hard to track as far as specific data, you know, what other dynamics are going on, but we are really seeing that mental health is a big concern, and with the change in the redesign of Department of Human Services, that some of those clients are not meeting criteria for services through Department of Human Services, and we're seeing family members, because of conflict, charging a family member in order to get services. And then we really look at, especially those younger kids, do you start a delinquent record in order to get services to the family when it really may be more of a child in need of assistance? So that's something that we're continuing to try to get concrete data, but
right.
Sometimes there's a lot of other factors that it's extremely hard to say is that what predicted or
please keep us updated.
That's
something
will.
That I am just really, really concerned about.
And we certainly have waiting lists at the PMIC facilities, the psychiatric mental health facilities, and see some charges when clients may be on that waiting list and there's been conflict at home or in the community that has resulted in charges while they're pending getting those services.
Typically, how long would somebody be on that waiting list?
It varies anywhere from, I'd say short would be a 6 month, and it could be a year. So certainly when a family is in crisis mode, that's an extremely difficult time. The other unfortunate side of that is that some families give up. You know, they've tried,
right.
They've gone through what they can to get that assistance and feel like there isn't any hope or any services out there.
6 months is a lifetime.
Yes.
When you're 12 years old, 6 months is a lifetime.
Thank you.
The next department reports, Conservation, Mike Cox, again.
Gentlemen.
Cool.
First off, I just want to follow up on, Rick, your question from earlier this morning. As far as those statistics that were coming out of Woodward,
yep.
In relation to the High Trestle Trail, from 98 to 2010, there was a 35% decrease in taxable sales. Went from 5.42 down to 3.29 million. High Trestle Trail was constructed or opened in 2011. From 2011 to 2013, there was a 25% increase in taxable sales. So during that amount of time, that increase resulted to $1.17 million.
You know, Paul, I think, tongue-in-cheek, said, let's just pave the whole dang thing. I am really, really interested to see what kind of impact paving, especially all the heart of Iowa, would have on our communities down there. And am really excited about some of the progress, Mike, that you're making in conservation in terms of putting together a full-fledged trails plan. For Story County. So thank you.
Well, I do know, talking to a few of the supervisors in Polk County and some of the trail areas around some of the parks and other recreational bike trails and walking trails, the usage of has just skyrocketed, and I think it is really something that communities that are looking to more or less enhance wellness, not only through their employers' businesses, but through the general population, they're seeing that there are more and more people turning to outdoor recreational activities, mainly because it is a lot easier to walk and not have ankle problems and other types of things. So I see some tremendous benefits down the road, and I know that the Conservation Board and Mike has, obviously, we've been talking for a number of years, hopefully looking long-term how we could ultimately be in a position that we could pave more of our trails and so forth. And so it's just going to be, you know, a matter of funding and finding the funding streams. But I think the benefit from that is easily going to be a tremendous boom for outdoor recreational opportunities in our county.
What's your best guess of what it would cost to pave the entire thing? The Art of Iowa.
Well, we have been estimating it's going to be in the neighborhood of $6 to $7.5 million. I think and that's a fairly dated estimate. I think the numbers that you saw this morning from Travis at Huxley are pretty indicative numbers. They were at $282,000 per mile. So,
do we have? There's still some the right of way that we don't have. Isn't that correct?
There are still
two
lack or gaps in continuity. Yes, one west of Huxley, and one east of Collins.
Thanks.
The other thing I just want to follow up quickly again pertaining to the Heart of Iowa Trail. In relation to the bid, that we just opened, I did some quick math. The FEMA approved amount, that $97,000 I mentioned, our match portion of that was $14,550. That is in this year's budget. That has been budgeted for. If we approve this bid of that we opened today, that local match portion would be $24,150. So that means we would need an additional $9,600 from local funding. So just to clarify those two things.
Sure.
So speaking of FEMA projects and flood-related repair projects. We've been doing a litany of these this summer, and once we finally got the FEMA approval for everything, which took some time. So we have been busy with culvert repairs this summer. We've been busy with ditch cleanouts this summer and several other odds and ends all along or mostly along the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. Some in some of our other parks along the Greenbelt that had some flooding the year before as well. So we've been busy with that. Most of those are now wrapped up. Most of those are completed. Those were all smaller projects. And those are now we're ready to finally do this trail resurfacing. We wanted to get those earthwork projects done, culvert projects done, cleanouts done before we put this final dress coat back on the trail. So it has been a difficult summer for use of the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. There have been a couple spots in particular that have been difficult. We continue to have ongoing issues with drainage along the trail, with sedimentation from neighboring lands, etc. We continue to have those issues, and we will for some time.
Yes, that's also one of the side benefits of paving. Rule of thumb with any hard surfacing is that your maintenance costs are going to go down, and I think we will see that. But at the flip side, the capital costs are significantly more than a soft surface trail. So that's the dichotomy between those different surfacing practices. Quickly on Dakins, we've got buildings going up. If you've been by there, you've probably seen that. Now you can start to see some red roofs and et cetera. So buildings are going up.
Just slid $1 million forward from last year's budget to this year's budget. Now I'm expecting that we're not going to have to do that again next year. We're going to get done this year.
There you go. We're going to get done. So they're going up well. Yeah, we're a little bit behind schedule. Some of the rain we had earlier in the year put us a little bit behind, but we still expect to wrap up this year and then open the park next year. So in addition to buildings right now, they've got most of the undergrounds done. So they've got the utilities done. They've got water to all the campsites, electric to all the campsites, and they're moving along quite well. Still a little bit of a few things that we need to touch up from the last phase of construction. We need to do a little bit more tile work around the wetlands. We've got one wetland draining into, or actually two wetlands draining from some tile that weren't discovered last year in construction, so we still have to work with that. We've got another tile that was discovered that drains into or daylights into the emergency spillway that we still need to address coming from the east. And that's a 10-inch tile and a pretty continual flow. And so we need to come up with an answer for that. We don't want to just have an open flow in the emergency spillway. That's erosion prone, and so we might end up tiling that down further down to, say, the plunge pool below the dam.
Right.
So those are options. That's one option that we're looking at for that. So we still have a few odds and ends that need to be wrapped up from that project. Another one that we did last year was the Roland Wildlife Area. That's a new area that we purchased. It'd be northeast of Roland, 80-acre tract that was purchased with state funds and Story County Pheasants Forever funds. NRCS has accepted that project into one of their easement programs, Wetland Reserve Program. And so as one of the things that that project does is pays for all of the wetland creation on that tract. And that was started last fall after crops came out. Really did not get finished. I would say we got 80% done, and then they got shut down from weather. Then this year has not been conducive to getting back on site. They did a very good job in that 80% of their work creating a wetland. That's made getting back on site a little difficult. I've just got a couple of photos here I'll show you. So we met Friday on site with NRCS engineers and the contractor and trying to get a solution to how we're going to finish this project up. There is more water in there than in that wetland than was designed for, significantly more, which is a good thing on one hand. On the other hand, it's causing some wet areas off site, so very concerning. So we have a good working relationship with the landowners, neighboring landowners, but we do need to get this resolved. So we will actually go in and drain a portion of it now to get that work completed. So that is underway. It's probably being drained some as we speak.
You ever heard of a wetland that's too wet?
I tell you, that's just, it's a beautiful site. Everyone that's been up there, as far as the NRCS folks and others involved, Ducks Unlimited coordinates these WRP projects for NRCS. And so, in fact, as we were up there, there was a late brood of blue-winged teals that almost stepped on in the grass. So the wildlife is all over up at that site. You can see a little bit from the pictures. Another thing that we just completed, we budgeted a little bit of money to construct a new dock at Peterson, West Peterson Park. We didn't want to purchase one. We wanted to construct one. We worked with a group from ISU, a group that we have worked with in the past to do construction projects, and they have some funding. So we were able to provide, we just installed this dock at Peterson that I'll show you some pictures of, incredible dock, and for very little money from our funds.
Okay. Oh, wow. I could see diving off of that.
Cannonball, Wayne.
That is nice.
Yeah, don't get any kinds of those ideas.
Oh, okay.
So at any rate, that's a tremendous addition to the park there, and the same group has constructed another dock, and that'll be put next to the pavilion that they constructed last year.
So. And maybe I'm sure that we'll talk about this to the Conservation Board and so forth, but I'm sure we do some type of follow-up for special recognition for our partners that do things like this. And I would maybe ask if you would consider working with Leanne and let's getting something like this in our newsletter as well, because I think it gives, again, special recognition for the outreach to the community and groups at Iowa State. So.
Yeah, very good. And I know Leanne has talked about or had some suggestions of doing parks of the month for the newsletter. And I think that's a wonderful idea. One of the things we've tried to do with Peterson, you're all well aware of the kind of reputation that that Peterson has had, and we've made a concerted effort over the last few years to really reverse that. And it's things like this that go a long ways toward cleaning that park up, and we've seen that. It's been incredible. Incredible about face on that park. Travis mentioned earlier the SERPTA grant, so just a couple funding items here. The SERPTA grant, we did receive $180,000 that would go toward that trail trail paving project. For that same that project that Travis mentioned, so that was a long time in coming on the final notice on that, but we did just get that. So, and then a couple other funding projects. One, was mentioned earlier today as well by Lisa on the WERB project with Hickory Grove Watershed. Just to bring you up to speed on that, we did receive funding from WERB and from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources to do that project. It's now in engineering, so we're going through the engineering phase on that, doing the design on that, and starting the permitting on it, working very closely with that landowner. So we still expect to do construction on that next summer. So that is moving along. I think maybe you've heard from Margaret that the sewer replacement portion of that project has been tremendously successful, and that's moving along quite nicely as well. One grant that we are contemplating submitting for is an IDOLS grant that is a watershed project. We are working with Prairie Rivers of Iowa and the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority to put a program together that would fund educational campaigns in Squaw Creek Watershed as well as the Hickory Grove and maybe even greater Indian Creek Watershed. to address public awareness within those watersheds, number one. Number two would fund a portion of agricultural practices, conservation practices. Probably the what you hear about the most as far as that those practices go is cover crops. So this grant would pay a portion of cover crop reimbursement to landowners. So we're moving forward on that, and then it would fund a watershed coordinator as well. So this grant would fund the awareness campaign and the coordinator at 100%. So that we're moving forward on. As far as our education programs, boy, we had full camps this summer. Those were just tremendous, very, very well received. We're just wrapping up our teacher meetings for the fall. We've been to all of the elementaries, we've been to all of the middle schools, and we are in all of those schools now. We added that fourth naturalist, so that person is now on board, and even with that person, all of our fall time slots, so all of September, October are full, April is full, and May is full already. We still have some time in the winter months available. Those are probably easily three-quarters full right now. So that's going well. Just quickly, a couple of our upcoming events. I think everyone knows about the legislative reception that we're working on for November 14th. Plug that one away in your calendar. Put a bookmark there. It's November 14th, and it will be in the morning. That's a Friday. We're also, coordinating the second annual Veterans Hunt. Really well received last year, primarily coordinated by Pheasants Forever. The date on that is September 20th. We're doing a youth hunt with Pheasants Forever as well, and that's October 11th. So those are just a couple. And one new event we're doing this year, it's a local foods bike ride. And so far we've got over 40 people registered for it. And so we expect that that'll go really well. That's September 7th, and we're doing that in coordination with Prairie Rivers of Iowa. So tremendous new program. And all of those are coming along real well. Our Wild Women of the Woods, you may have remember me talking about right. That last year.
Yep.
I love that name.
We filled up. We were at capacity last year as far as the number of participants. We're closing that gap again this year. We had such a good response last year. We are accepting more people this year, so we'll take up to 85 people this year. And so we expect that to go very well also. So,
Mike, you mentioned the grant from SERPA, and I wanted to ask that I represent Story County on the policy committee and Darren Moon on the technical committee, I did receive a copy of the awarding of that grant. I believe that when we receive those, these are forwarded on to the auditor's office and we keep them on file. I don't know if what you do with Carol, but I wanted to say on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, we certainly want to acknowledge Carol again as the project manager on this for, you know, her outstanding application and so forth. And since the Joint Committee did approve that a grant for $180,791, Mr. Chair, I wanted to pass that on to you and then have Shelley, you know, file that, you know, as a notice of receipt of that from SERPA. So, okay.
Outstanding. Yeah. I had a question about how it's going with the Corps of Engineers.
Going well. I met, had a site tour with their representative yesterday, And we toured all of those, well, to what we could tour, those parcels. And so, you know, she expects to have that estimate back to us very soon.
Yep.
She also expects that we'll be following up with me. They might want a MOU or some other agreement with us prior to getting very much, very far down the road with that transfer.
Please keep us posted.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
And I'll see you tomorrow.
Liaison assignments to committee meetings. Wayne.
I met briefly with Ron Christian yesterday and via telephone with Deb a little bit, and just basically the majority of the time was related to completion of the evaluation, performance evaluation and so forth. I presented it to him, asking that he will look it over, and then he and I will get back together, and then we'll sit down and talk about that, and then we'll also talk about goals that he would like to see accomplished from July 1st of this year through June 30th of 2015. And so it was an excellent exchange, and he's continued to just, you know, want to keep informed in terms of soon as we hear something from the RFP process and other things. And that was mentioned yesterday in my other report. I'll mention the Central Iowa Governance Board after that, but that things are going as well as to be expected at this point in time, and just told him that we're still trying to gather as much information as we possibly can as we navigate through that process. My next bit would be then the Central Iowa Regional Governance Board met yesterday. We had an excellent meeting. All but one county was represented. Just a couple highlights of that. The 28E agreement that was approved, that we approved, you know, previously, was approved by the committee. The 28E agreement, which involved asset, was also approved by the governance board, which means that they will be a part of the funding stream with that. Considerable questions talked about the process and so forth, and whether or not any other counties had any other kind of programs similar to this, because there is a portion in there that talks about the administration person portion of that, and but then all the other counties recognize that those were already built into the contracts that are basically been approved, and since this will be a separate bringing the region into the fold, this was a necessary step. So after discussion, that was unanimously approved. And then we also approved the asset funding priorities at this meeting, and those priorities pretty much dovetail what was approved by the legislation for fiscal year 2015-2016, which talked about the core service domains and the additional core service domains. And so there were about five basic concepts, funding priorities approved, four of the additional core service areas. And then a lot of discussion, we talked about the fiscal policy update from through July 15th, and then there was considerable discussion regarding a request from Hamilton County regarding $216,945.51, which was related to state bills that were missed somehow in the process of getting completed within the timeline of May 30th of this year. And so it spilled over. And either way, Hamilton County was going to have to come back to the governance board to either ask for additional dollars to be able to cover that oversight. But after considerable discussion, it was approved that to go ahead and grant that at this time, even though there was some discussion regarding the current fiscal policy that was in place. But I think that this also set in place for us a mechanism now with, since all the counties have to submit on a monthly basis their ending balance and their claims and all of that, the admin team will be able to help monitor and see if there, you know, maybe something is being missed and that has to be submitted. So that went well, and then there was a improvement of contracts. The last six provider contracts were approved, and then there was the policies and procedure manual was also approved. And there's ongoing discussion with the IT update, which will give us a website presence, and it will allow for some of our more smaller meetings to actually be held via conference call or go-to meetings type of situation. But the ISAC IT CoStar group, which is the ICIT group, has really given a lot of input in terms of what services we might need, and I think they have worked with all the IT directors in each of the member counties regarding how this will be implemented. So at some point you'll hear a little bit more about where we are in terms of whether we're going to need to purchase some software to make this become easier a method of communicating between all of the member counties. And then there was discussion on the Central Iowa Juvenile Detention Transportation question. It was determined that we would ask Tony Reed to actually reach out to each of the sheriffs in that area because really they're going to be the ones that will have to determine whether or not they're interested in them assisting in the transportation of some of the clients that the sheriffs deemed is not of a severe risk that they could handle. And I think with that, then they will come back to us at a later time, and then if necessary, a contract would probably be offered just like we would do any other contract with any other entity. But hopefully that will be the next step in that development. There were three counties that already expressed a somewhat of interest. One county really wasn't interested in pursuing it right now because it takes overtime away. Some of their deputies like that overtime. But the reality of that is if it really takes off and there's a tremendous savings to general fund dollars, I think supervisors are going to be hard-pressed not to say, hey, why don't you take a look at this too in that one particular county. But at this time, it's going to be up to the sheriffs and the detention center to indicate to us whether or not this is something that they definitely want to have us move forward with. So that was the basis of that meeting. I think Dean Adams, who is going to be retiring at the end of the year, probably summed it up best. He said he has just been so impressed with the dialogue and the discussion that really take place and the value of the face-to-face meetings. He said some of the issues that we discuss, that when you can look at across the table and see the body language of the people, you get an entirely different perspective than you could do if you were just doing that via teleconference or just your computer conference type of situations. And so he stressed again why it's important that our representatives continue to show up and be present at these particular meetings. And for him, he has been very impressed with how well we have worked together to resolve issues that are of regional in scope. And we also recognize that there are going to be other issues that the regional board is going to have to tackle when it comes to looking at the fiscal policies and how money is going to be addressed, and then how we're going to come up with a levering rate for each county at the perhaps right before the budgeting process takes place in November, December. So we'll hear more about that from Deb at a later time. But all in all, it's an excellent meeting, and I'm pleased to just kind of report and give you a little update of where we are on that.
Well, like Dean, I'm impressed with the operation of the region. It was something I was a little afraid of, And was not convinced it was going to move as it has moved. It has truly seemed to be operating at, with the one region mentality rather than 10 counties that happen to sit around the same table. So I've been impressed with that. I've got three quick ones today, amazingly enough. One, Leanne continues her meeting with elected officials and department heads, just talking about the new position and what it can do. Really interesting. Been overwhelmingly positive, those meetings. I've attended some of them with Leanne, and some of them she's just done on her own. I would expect that we will see an updated work program coming from Leanne once she gets all the way to the end of those meetings, but it's going really, really well. Continue to visit with DOT and interested citizens about the potential restricting of access between Nevada and Ames. I would expect that we'll start to have some more serious conversations later this fall. And then we've just got to pay attention to when that project might start to roll onto a five-year calendar somewhere. I'll keep you guys updated as those conversations continue. And then I've been visiting with a loosely affiliated neighborhood association over by CLP who just have questions about ultimately what's happening with CLP and what might happen with those facilities over there. And I'll keep you guys updated as I have those conversations further.
Okay. I had a good meeting last Friday with the Deb and Jessica and Alyssa and myself on the transition, and Ron Christian on the transition process for the employees at CLP. So I think it was a good session, a lot of good ideas, a lot of good discussion. I know Alyssa's working on a few things to benefit those employees as we move toward transition. So
important. Thank you for doing it.
Good.
Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action due to the open records, open meetings law, but may do so in the future. I don't see anybody moving towards the mic. Announcements from the supervisors. Wayne.
Pass.
Rick. Pass. I'll pass also. Closed session. Jessica Reynolds.
Good morning to the board. Pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5, Sub 1, Sub C, the Story County Attorney's Office respectfully requests that the Story County Board of Supervisors vote to hold a closed session to discuss strategy with counsel in matters that are presently in litigation or where litigation is imminent, where its disclosure would be likely to prejudice or disadvantage the position of the government in said litigation.
And I'll move that we go into closed session as recommended.
I will second it.
Have a motion to second. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. We'll take a 5-minute recess and reconvene in the board conference room.
Okay. We're not requesting any action. Okay. Thank you. Good.
Okay, we're back in open session at 11:44, and I'll take a motion for adjournment.
I move adjournment.
Second. Motion to second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.